Hello, we are back. Carl Sabatino with Roland Smith. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, this is Smith Sabatino. And our guest in this segment is David Hsu. Let me read you just a bit about his rather extensive background, much too long to read in this intro. Originally from New York City, David Hsu is a community activist and ceramic artist living in Paterson, New Jersey. Over the last 24 years, that's a quarter of a century, Mr. Hsu's involvement in the Paterson community has involved being chairman of the quasi-judicial Paterson Zoning Board and the Urban Enterprise Zone Committee for Economic Development. Among many other works, he's also been heavily involved with the battle, which they won, for the National Landmark Historic Site becoming a prefab vinyl-sided townhouse development, 7 acres of all of that. David Hsu was involved with all of that. He is also recipient of the New Jersey State Historic Preservation Award and has also served as a member of the Paterson Historic Preservation Commission. David, welcome to the show.
Hello.
And that's only a part of your extensive background. And the reason why we've asked you to come on the broadcast, David, I have worked, as you know, and I did for many years in helping save communities in this country, what we call the downtown main streets. Particularly here in New York City, Staten Island's New Dorp, places like Evansville, Indiana, and Boise, Idaho, where the concept which became a forerunner of the development to save downtowns across America. And that's been going on and continues to go on in various variations of that original plan, which was started in 1992. You've been working in Paterson. Tell us a little bit about the work in Paterson, New Jersey, and the concept that you've developed to work in downtowns and so on to save these magnificent communities. I would like to preface this by saying, in Paterson, New Jersey, in the center of the city, is the Lou Costello Memorial Park.
It is. It's right across the street from my house.
And I absolutely love it. Go.
Yes. But really, the cornerstone in the city is the Great Falls. You know, it's the second largest waterfall east of the Mississippi by volume. And it's really a magnificent, magnificent natural feature.
Now, that is an historic landmark, is it not?
That's a national natural landmark.
That's extraordinary. And I remember when that fight was joined for, was it back in the 80s they got into that?
80s, 90s. I think that's about when it was happening. Early 90s.
Was the Historic Preservation Commission part of that particular?
Yeah, well, the original designation actually was back in the early 70s when they created the National Landmark Historic District, and then President Gerald Ford came to Paterson and he signed it into legislation.
You know, Mr. Hsu, every city, big, well, let's say medium and small, has a wonderful little place called downtown. Why is it important to maintain and sustain the essence of a downtown?
Well, it's really the corner of, or it's the center of a community, and it's a gathering place, and it's a place where people can join together and have involvement with each other in a way that you don't get when you live in a rural area without traveling as much. You can just walk downstairs, walk across the street, go into your restaurant, see all your friends. It's a different way of living.
How are we doing with our downtowns these days?
I think it depends on the downtown. I mean, in Paterson, Paterson's reinvented itself many times. It's a very old city, a founding father city. Hamilton came to Paterson and envisioned an industrialized America with a working class of people earning in a way that was different from Jefferson's vision, which was intellectual agrarian.
Yes. Well, they disagreed in great heated debates on that issue. But the point is that the downtown areas, and I remember working to save New Dorp, Staten Island, to work on its little downtown community, which we managed after 6 long years to save with a lot of great people and a lot of help and support from the city of New York and the governor's office. I've seen this this move to save the downtowns, and particularly from what I call the infestation of malls across the country. My point is, again, how are we is it better than it was? I left that scene some odd years ago to move on to other things. But has it gotten better? Because up to 10 years ago, they weren't doing very well.
You know, I can only speak about Paterson with great understanding. The communities struggle. They struggle to find an identity. You know, in Patterson, because we have such a long history that predates the founding of the country in some ways, we've had to redefine ourselves. They had industrial locomotives. They invented the Colt revolver in Patterson, continuous rolled paper, which we all need every day.
Correct.
Then the center of the city, the downtown area, also was a place where people came to shop. So you had a business model where you had a storefront downstairs, and because shipping was such a difficult thing, you had everything stored in a warehouse above the store. That business model doesn't exist anymore. Now we have a mall in an outer-lying area, probably near a transportation hub, you know, for vehicles.
Correct.
And people drive in and they park, and everything comes in by truck and by air, you know, air to truck and freight and such, and people buy their stuff and they drive home. So that way of functioning doesn't really exist as much anymore. What we have is a place where people to come still and immigrate and to get a start and to start becoming involved in our nation. And that's more easily done in a city than it is done in different areas from my observation, just based on how many people we have here.
Well, it became back in the 80s, in the 70s and 80s, a means to an end. And that means to an end was to bring people back to the center city.
Mm-hmm.
Public transportation was something that we were all seeking, and we still have, believe it or not, there's more public transportation development in this country than in most countries around the world. Mm-hmm. And we're still missing the point. If you don't bring those light rail, which they're doing now in various cities, if you don't bring light rail into the city, not buses, light rail, which allows cleaner energy to be used, they can carry more people, move them more quietly in and out of center cities. If we can get to that, and that seems to be the next generation.
Well, I think what David is talking about here, though, too, is when Patterson, and you're talking about Patterson, New Jersey, we should let our folks know around the country where we're particularly talking about. When Patterson was first started, it had water power.
Correct.
And that was because it was to be used for industrial purposes.
Right.
That's why Hamilton was very helpful, in, I would imagine, in promoting Patterson, New Jersey. But also in those days, you didn't have the transportation needs and the parking spaces you need today. You had a horse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm talking about the early days now. Then you came in, and then after the horse, you had rail and some kind of teamster.
We had canals.
And the canals.
And
right.
The Morris Canal.
So, but today, what I'm understanding from what you're saying is that we've got these inner cities are becoming gentrified to a place of both memory and camaraderie, and where people can get together and enjoy a meal, a couple of drinks perhaps, as well as the historical aspect of their city.
It sounds all very bucolic, but it doesn't always turn out that way, and certainly not always the case in Patterson, and that's not to say a negative thing about the community.
No, but any city is going to have those kind of problems.
Oh, yes,
but
yes.
But what I'm saying is, isn't it wonderful that there seems to be a lot of people like you who would like to sustain and rebuild the inner cities of America?
Well, you know, the communities have to find their own identity and find a way to build upon that, to reinvent themselves, to create some structure now or economic support. Very quickly, in New Jersey, communities are supported by their land taxes. And that's an agrarian-based form of taxation. And it creates a shortfall of money for the urban centers because you can have 6 acres in a rural area that might have a family of four on it. But 6 acres in an urban center could have 1,000 people or more living on it. And you just can't lift up or get out of six acres of land enough money to provide services to that many people. And that doesn't mean social welfare services, that just means basic services. And so the cities are always at a disadvantage economically, and they fall behind, and then that is a hindrance to them getting to the development and the quality of life that they really would like to have for their citizens.
Well, you know, I was thinking as you were talking, David, and I think we're going to carry David over to the next segment because this one area of the question of taxes, okay, seems to have become more of a problem over the last 20 years than it was before, and I'd like to know why, in your opinion.
Okay? In my opinion, well, I mean, the government has gotten a lot larger, and, you know, I watched Steve Jobs talking once, and he said that one of the problems that it had at Apple at a point was that people were focusing on process rather than substance.
Hold that thought. Process rather than substance. Well, Apple, hold it. We're running out of time for this segment. Stay going to stay with us, David, one
sure.
more, please.
Absolutely.
Roland, let's continue on as we do, and we'll try to stay out of trouble with David Sue. Carl Sabatino with Roland Smith. This is Smith Sabatino on America Weekend. We're back. Stay with us.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. So how about an easy way to get your kids to eat their veggies so they won't eat anything that's green and not fried? Well, there's a way. Here's the sneaky science of it. When it comes to eating vegetables, most parents cajole. They beg. Some even pay their kids to eat green things. But getting your kids to eat veggies may be as simple as renaming them. It's called stealth health. So instead of calling them carrots, ask your child, hey, would you like some x-ray carrots? Instead of plain spinach, how about would you like some strongman spinach? Also, simply asking your child would you like fruit with your meal gets a yes 70% of the time. What's the cheap psychological trick? To change a behavior, you gotta change the marketing. It works every time. Check out my book, Cheap Psychological Tricks for Parents, at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.
Think green.
Harrison with you. A surprising cash cow now lies in a surgical procedure some doctors are employing to treat hyperactivity in children. There's been some evidence that hyperactivity could be caused by a lack of sleep from apnea or a sleep disorder. So doctors are pushing tonsillectomies, or the removal of a child's tonsils, as treatment for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD. They say boys with ADHD snore more than other children, and that the tired body may overcompensate by becoming hyperactive. Some 50% of tonsillectomies are done because enlarged tonsils interfere with a child's breathing. But in these scenarios, what's left out is that sleep apnea or other disorders are often caused by obesity. And throat surgery for profit over dealing with a child's diet may not be in the best interest of any child. From the Greeniverse,
Think Green with Harrison at ThinkGreenRadio.com.